Thanks, Rick. It's great to be here, and you're very nice to invite me. It's great to get back to see you again.
Well, Bill, it's great to be with you. You know, I always say, when there's big public policy issues, you're in the middle of it or in the vicinity, and there's probably no bigger issue in terms of the future of our city than this one. So how about explaining to our listeners exactly what the purpose and mission of this task force was?
Well, the purpose was to examine the police and fire pensions, where they are, the state of their unfunded liability, which, as you know, is $1.7 billion, of which a significant proportion, as much as 80% of it, relates to vested benefits. The other part of it is pension design going forward and the governance of the Police and Fire Pension Board and giving the taxpayers more control over the entity that is making these decisions going forward. So those were the three aspects in addition to the investment authority and trying to figure out what is best for them to do that. Let me just start with the governance piece of it. Over the years, as you're listening, I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but the Police and Fire Pension Board has five trustees. One is a member of the police part of the fund. One is elected by the police members. One is a fire or rescue person that's elected by those members. Two are elected by the city council, and the fifth one is now elected by those first four. If the city is going to contribute significantly more dollars to this program, to this fund, then it seems only right, and it definitely seemed this to the task force, that the city have more control over the responsibilities of that board. So our proposal in governance, one of the things we do is ask that the mayor, with the approval of the council, appoint that fifth member. There are other proposals floating around that the city council do that directly. We felt that the mayor ought to have some input into the governance in this way.
You know, Bill, just to give a little back up a little bit, give a little bit of context, back when I was at City Hall a long time ago, I can remember just over 10 years ago, the contribution on the Police and Fire Pension Fund was maybe $20-30 million a year. Just over 10 years later, it's approaching $150 million. This year, $148 million.
In this year's budget, it's $148 million, which crowds out so many things that we need, like libraries. As you know, Rick, when we worked together on library funding, libraries, we built this magnificent infrastructure, yet we don't have the ability to pay for the operation. So we're actually closing libraries and reducing their hours. That's not a first-rate city.
Well, you know, Bill, at the beginning I mentioned that many people consider this to be maybe the most significant public policy issue we face, in part because of what you just said, the potential crowding out of our ability to meet operating demands, but also crowding out capital investment. And I'm sure that a lot of callers may be interested in both those topics. Let me just mention, this is Policy Matters with WJCT. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're at 549-2937, 549-2937. And Melissa Ross will be back tomorrow with First Coast Connect. This is just to give her a little break while we discuss some public policy issues. But Bill, let's go to some of, we described some of the problem, rising pension costs, and they're going to project it to rise significantly in the future. And so part of what you had was this design, this sort of solution-oriented approach. What is sort of the task force thruster? Solution towards this.
It may be helpful for your listeners. There are really two big issues, and that is the unfunded liability and how do you pay for that, and number two is the pension design going forward. Ultimately, the pension design going forward has very little impact on the unfunded liability because you've got all the people that are in the system now. And the Florida Constitution and the courts have said that you cannot take away pension benefits that are earned. So several people on my emails that I get, and I've heard proposals, well, let's just close the system, not pay any more COLAs, and just stop it and change to 401k. Well, the Florida Constitution protects all the benefits to date that have been earned so that, for example, on COLAs, the task force has recommended that the COLAs for new employees be reduced from the 3% to the lower of 1.5% or CPI. We're also recommending that going forward for existing employees. We can't change legally the 3% for benefits earned to date. So that's baked in.
So part of the pension design solution is that prospectively.
That's right. And so we can't go backwards. We've got to look forwards. And so I hope your listeners can appreciate that the payment of the unfunded liability, which is why we have a funding issue and why we have suggested the sales tax surtax as an option for paying that. We've got to take care of the unfunded liability no matter what the design is going forward. And on the design itself, we heard strong arguments from both Sheriff Rutherford and from Chief Centerfit from the fire department. Please don't make my benefits portable. What they are trying to do is build a workforce that they recruit and retain for a period of time. As Chief Centerfit said, when someone is having a heart attack, they want an experienced firefighter to come help them in that emergency. They don't want a young person with 3 years experience. They want someone with 10 to 15 years experience that knows what they're doing. On the police side of it, Sheriff Rutherford said it costs $70,000 to train a new policeman. And when you get into the SWAT teams, that sort of thing, it's even more. So they don't want to lose that investment. Right. So what the design of the plan is to keep people here because their benefits don't vest under the new proposal for 10 years. And the benefits really kick in, encouraging them to stay until they're about age 55. That's what they strongly urged us to do.
Bill, we have several callers for you. And Jeff, I understand you've been holding a little bit. Thank you for your patience, and welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, yeah, I had a couple comments on the pension thing. I guess the first one is on the JEA thing. I mean, I actually live in St. John's County, but so we don't have quite the same problems, at least at the moment. But you know, if they are going to put it into the JEA, I would think that you would want to put it on, consumption rates, not on, base service rates.
Jeff,
so,
thank you.
Someone that's on a pension or whatever is not going to see their rate go up $10 a month or something. It would go up by, let's say a cent a kilowatt hour or whatever.
Jeff, thank you for your question and comment. The caller raises a very good point. He's going to the unfunded liability issue and the revenue question.
That's right.
And do you have a comment, Bill, about his
question? Well, directly to the mayor's proposal to go to the JEA. First of all, in fairness to the mayor, his proposal does not anticipate that there will be a rate increase because of what he is suggesting. He's basically suggesting that you move the JEA employees out of the general employees pension fund and they would be able to renegotiate those pension benefits and there would be savings. The task force has said, we don't know enough about that. JEA is resisting that, and we really can't afford to wait on that. So we have said that, well, down the road, Mayor, if you work a deal with the JEA and bring it back, then that might be an offset to some of the things we recommend. But we've got to move on, and we can't wait for it.
So basically what you're doing, you laid that one aside for your overall recommendations.
Right. And the same with real property. We've said that because of the governance issues, that the city should not transfer real property to the Police and Fire Pension Board. But that doesn't mean that the city shouldn't sell unused assets and take the cash and on a one-time basis give it to the fund. It's very complicated because if I sell a piece of real estate for $10 million and give the $10 million to the Police and Fire Pension Fund, that's great. The unfunded liability goes down $10 million for that one day. But if the investments don't produce and I lose money on my investments, that $10 million comes right back. So it's really a very tentative fix.
Bill, thank you. You're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. Melissa Ross will be back tomorrow on First Coast Connect. We have a question from Don on Bay Meadows. Don, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Who in the Austin or in the Delaney or in the Payton administrations is being held responsible for this pension mess? That's my first question. My second question is, I am against totally using the Jacksonville JEA rate increase as a way to pay for these pensions. I would take it from their profits. They do make profits. I would take it from their bonus programs or their executives because we own that company. They're a utility. They exist at the pleasure of the county. And I would take it from the other utilities that we have serving this county. But I would not have any rate increases at all whatsoever. And, you laugh, but somebody is supposed to be taking the blame for that. Because I remember back in the early 1990s when Rick Mulvaney was in city government moving around from job to job.
Absolutely.
That he was also involved with issues concerning reducing the reserve requirements, and that was freeing up monies for either operation budget or capital budget.
Well, Don, thank you very much for your comments. A little bit of comment on context. This isn't much consolation for Jacksonville, but the pension crisis isn't limited here. You take a look at California, you look at Illinois, you look at New Jersey. Unfortunately, take a look at what's happened in Detroit. I think what we've seen historically across the country is that downturn in the market, benefits packages, and a lot of things have contributed nationally and locally to the problems that we're facing as a city. But Bill, do you have any, he makes some things to comment on.
He does. And thank you for those comments. Rick is right. This is not unique to Jacksonville. What we have had over the years, and let me just say the task force ultimately decided we are where we are. We need to look forward and try to solve it and not go blame. If we got to blaming people, then everybody would be pointing fingers and no solution would be had. But that said, historically, over the years, not only here but throughout the country, there has been really an unholy alliance between people of both Democrats and Republicans who sought the endorsements of unions, not just the police and fire unions, but throughout the governmental structure. And those would lead to people getting elected, and so they would make decisions about pensions, for example, and the taxpayers themselves were never at the table because you had this alliance, be they Democrat or Republican, it didn't really matter, but just I'll call it a short-sightedness that meant that benefits were negotiated that people maybe didn't really understand. For example, in the 30-year agreement in 2000, one of the benefits that came into that was the COLA. And that was made, it's a 3% COLA, and that was made retroactive. Well, the liability for that COLA is just incredible. And I don't know that Rick was there, I think, but I don't really think people understood what the impact was going to be. Plus, you had a growing economy. No one foresaw the 2008 disaster in our economy. So the investment returns definitely played a part. The fact that there was no professional investment advice, there is an investment manager to the fund, you do get that. But what we have recommended is that an investment committee of five people with real professional expertise serve as volunteers to the board of the Police and Fire Pension Fund to give real knowledgeable and professional advice on what the investment should be.
But we have several callers on the line. But before we go to them, I do want to have you make clear to our listeners that this is a package deal, meaning that the discussion that we've been reading about that's been highly covered, whether it's going to be a proposed sales tax increase or proposed property tax increase, that the revenue, this is all part of a comprehensive approach that is coupled with reform. Would you like to comment on the package?
That's true, and that has been said loud and clear, and most recently at our last meeting, that this is of a piece where the city should be willing to contribute additional dollars only if there's shared sacrifice. So part of our proposals are not only for new employees, but to put on existing employees some reductions in what their benefits are, particularly as it relates to the COLA and their contributions. We're recommending that their contributions go up from 7% of their salaries to 10% of their salaries. So there is shared sacrifice, but it is as of a piece, because if the fund is going to be made more reliable and sustainable, then we've got to get the pension design down to where people going forward all contribute.
Well, Bill, we have lots and lots of calls. And so, Gary, I want to welcome you to the program. Do you have a question for Bill Shy?
Yes. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. I got two questions. The first question, I hear a lot where we are, but I don't hear a lot how we got there. The city borrowed money from the police and fire in the general fund when Mayor Delaney was in office. And they stopped paying before we ever got into a recession. So that money that was borrowed. Nobody was saying, well, this money was borrowed from the police and fire and the general pension. How much money would have been made off of their money? I mean, the city came and borrowed money from them.
Gary, thank you for your question. And Bill, do you want to comment?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question, but and it really helps to set something to set the community at ease. The city has always made the required contributions. There's never been a delinquency on the part of the city in paying its contributions, and that's a misunderstanding. There was no borrowing from anything. Yeah. What happened was, in accordance with the 30-year agreement, the city did make its contributions from the fire reserve fund when the investment returns were good. And so that reserve fund has been reduced, and that's what John Keane says, that fund should be supplemented back. But the city, as a matter of fact, has always made its contributions, and that's a small amount anyway when you consider the entire $1.7 billion unfunded liability.
You're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 549-2937. Melissa Ross will be back tomorrow morning with First Coast Connect. And Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Do you have a question for Bill Shai?
Hello?
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for this program. It's excellent. I'd like to ask Mr. Shai, first I'd like to make a comment. It seems to me that not only in Jacksonville, but in Florida, when times are good and the stock market is doing well, stocks and bonds are up, politicians seem to make these promises of tax cuts and giving more money back to the people. And then when there is an economy downturn, which always comes, they're looking around saying, what happened? Now, I think part of this problem, a great part, is an unrealistic expectations of returns on the investments made with this money.
Well, Paul, thank you for that comment. You know, Bill, that's a whole big topic, but we have had historically an 8.4% guaranteed rate of return, which everyone recognizes was too high. And our caller makes some good points.
That's right. And we have recommended that go down to 7%. As the assumed rate of return. And as a matter of fact, the Police and Fire Pension Board has already voted to change it to 7%. But we go beyond that, and I'll get a little bit in the weeds. That's really a good question. At 7%, with an assumed rate of return of 7%, the actuarial probability of that is 50-50. That means that 50 times out of 100, you'll be under that, and 50 times out of 100, you'll be over it. That's pretty risky, 50-50. What we're recommending is that we fund on the equivalent of a 5.4% return, which is where we get the additional $50 million that we're recommending. A 5.4% return has a 75% positive ratio. That means that 3 out of 4 times the returns are going to be equal or higher than 7.4%, and only a quarter of the time is the risk that they'll be less. So we think that will help, nothing's guaranteed, but that will help reduce the risk that the assumed rate of return will go lower than the contribution rate.
We've had a very patient caller here on the South Side, and DJ, I want to thank you for your patience. I know you've been waiting a while, and welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, DJ?
Yes, thank you. Thanks for taking my call, and thank you, Mr. Shai, for your service to the community. It's probably a thankless job.
Thank you very much. This committee is outstanding. All I do is guide the cats.
It is a terrific committee, community stewards, that's for sure. Do you have a question, DJ, for Bill?
Yeah, I do. I wonder what your opinion is of public servants who pre-fund their retirement accounts, you know, like investing $200,000 before they retire, and then, you know, could be retired for 10, 20, 30, 40 years and perhaps reap $2, $3, $4 million from the public treasury. Now, I realize it's because of changes either in the law or regulations that it's legal, but it doesn't seem to be very moral.
Well, DJ, thank you very much for your question. I'm not exactly sure about pre-funding.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand that. What in a defined benefit plan, it seems to me you're contrasting that with the defined contribution plan, so that which has been suggested. And a again, without getting into the weeds, that was just not a viable option for a number of reasons, both from a recruitment and retention aspect and from the legalities of where we are now. But in terms of pre-funding, if it's your cash and you pre-fund it and earn the rate of return on it that everything else is, then I don't really see a moral issue with that.
Bill, we have some other calls here, but I do want to ask you one question. Where do we go from here? I know a lot of our listeners are listening to this. You've spent a lot of time. You've had a great committee. You've been very thorough, very thoughtful. But what can the community expect from here forward? What happens next?
The report will go to the mayor, the council president, and to the police and fire pension board. Hopefully, it will then get set before the council so that legislation can come forward on governance, investment authority, and the unfunded liability. We have to wait on the pension design for collective bargaining, given Judge Wallace's order, which said that the pension design is the subject of collective bargaining and must be done in the sunshine and must be done every 3 years. That's on appeal, so we don't know where that will go. So our report takes the form of recommendations on three matters to the council and the president and the mayor, and on the other as to what the city's negotiating position should be in collective bargaining.
You're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT, our quarterly program. And Melissa Ross will be back tomorrow morning. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're at 549-2937, 549-2937. And Michael, I want to thank you very much for your patience and welcome you to the program. Michael? Hello? Oh, we may have lost our caller there. Thank you, Michael. Well, so we lost Michael on that phone call. Sure. Bill, do you have a hope that this report, that something can be done this year?
I hope so, and it's going to take a lot of effort. In our proposal, as you know, we've proposed that the council put on the ballot a referendum whereby the citizens can vote on a sales tax increase of 0.5%. That will require a referendum, but the sales tax surtax requires that it be used for fire and rescue services and facilities, and it must be offset by the amount in the ad valorem budget. So what we're recommending, so that we don't have a negative loss, is that the council vote to increase the millage rate equivalent to what a half-cent sales tax increase would be, about $68 million. And then if the citizens vote yes to the sales tax, automatically by statute, it's not something that the city council has any discretion over, automatically the millage rate drops back down to what it was before they increased it. So all you've really done is shifted the fire rescue over to the sales tax, and you pay the pension increases through the ad valorem taxes.
Well, you know, Bill, you've done a very nice job for our listeners of explaining the difference between the unfunded liability and the pension design issue. And on the unfunded liability piece, it's going to take the revenue.
That's right.
And on the pension design, you're linking these two as a package, but on the revenue side, what you're talking about is the ad valorem increase and then voters subsequently being able to kind of choose, in effect, between a sales tax and ad valorem. The question is, would those be sunsetted? Would there be a definite beginning point and an ending point?
Yes. Well, the millage rate automatically would sunset, because if the sales tax passes, then it must drop. It will take 14 years with what our recommendation is to pay off the unfunded, or to get to 80% funding, so it's not all gone. Plus, you still have the risk of investment returns. Plus, you have the $700 million unfunded liability in the general employees fund. So if you took that $68 million, we've recommended 50 for police and fire. That leaves another $18 million that could go to the general employees fund. So we think the committee hadn't voted on this, but somewhere between 14 and 20 years, you can write in an expiration date for the tax. Okay.
Jim, I want to welcome you to the program. Do you have a question for Bill Shy?
Yes, sir. What about the city employees that were illegally kept out of the pension fund for the last 30 years? What's going to be done with them?
Well, Jim, thank you for your question. I think he's talking about the class action lawsuit. There was a lawsuit filed a while back on some, I believe he's referring to some going to Social Security versus some going into the pension fund. Bill, are you familiar with that?
I'm not. Thank you for that question. That is not something that we've addressed, because we're specifically dealing with the police and fire and not the general employees.
So Bill, again, on his piece, there's been a lot of legal issues, and we're a little short on this time, but the 30-year agreement is in litigation. The Sunshine Law issue is in litigation. Yeah. How do you see those affecting the time frame for accomplishing reform?
I think that they don't affect it insofar as governance and the pay down of the unfunded liability. Where it will affect it is in the pension design. We think that if this passes, that we ought to start right up with collective bargaining, move that along so that we can get the process going, and hopefully reach an agreement this year.
Well, Bill, we have about 30 seconds left, and I want to give you an opportunity to comment to our listeners about this process, where you've been, and what your hopes are for where this will end up.
Well, thanks. And we're all in this together. We have said that this is not the mayor's plan. It's not the task force's plan. It's not the council's plan. It's the community's plan. My hope, having grown up here, gone to Lee High School, married my high school sweetheart, Jacksonville is a great place to live. We've got to appreciate that and realize that our quality of life is going to decline if we do nothing. So this is an opportunity to say, yes, let's look forward. Let's put our house in order and make this the best place that everybody knows that this is the best place in America to live.